system. I find you in the shows and moving are great. And being a nerd, the sign system is everywhere you go.
Believe it or not, Davey isn't at home. Please leave a message at the beep. I must be out or I'd pick up the phone. Where could I be? Believe it or not, I'm not home. Bringing that one back.
I was going to say that that's a rehash. I mean, it's nice, but.
But, you know, like all deliverables, that one could use a little bit of work. Welcome.
Well, also, sorry, we can edit that out or not, whatever. I was going to say that's a reusable component.
That's a reusable component. Well, welcome back, everyone. Happy 2023. Pretty certain this will be presented to you in 2023, but we're on episode, we're approaching 30.
Considering it's January, it's either we're going to invent a time machine or we're going to really hold on to this one for a while.
Yeah, we might. Who knows? But very excited to kick off the new year. How are you, PJ?
I'm good, man. The rain finally stopped. I'm not moving. Okay, so for those of you who don't live in the Bay Area, for whatever reason, we decided to not be in a drought for about 2 weeks. And we turned it up to 11 and there was rain everywhere. And everyone was flooding. So for a lot of people, that was their life for the last week or two, just making sure their house didn't float away. So I'm glad that that's over and I'm doing much better now. How about yourself?
Much better in terms of just staying safe, making sure like water is being diverted away from our homes, and a far cry from 6 or 7 months ago when we were complaining about PJ sweltering 70 degree weather. We're ready for the heat now.
I'm ready for it. Bring that heat, bring that not rain.
Yeah. But today we're talking about something we haven't really touched too much on, design delivery and deliverables, artifacts, what have you. And I thought that this was a fun one because just going back to previous episodes about extremes, I would say a PJism that I've always had in my mind was that we should get rid of design artifacts. Design artifacts should not exist. Right, PJ?
Yeah. You know, it's an evolving opinion of mine. But in the spirit of it, I think, you know, as little deliverables as possible. I still maintain that opinion.
Yeah. And when we had worked together working on Disney Plus, some feedback that you had given me was that we would just spend very, very scary amount of time on design artifacts. So whether those are visuals for deckware, which was a very popular thing at Disney and then elsewhere too, not just for Disney, but presenting artifacts and decks, but also just maintenance of these files that we continue to keep up to date. So outside of things that are just like our component libraries, how do we maintain templates or screens? We're spending hours and hours, weeks upon weeks of time, just making sure that we are chasing like the latest designs and patterns and such. And it really extended beyond, I would say, managing components, and really made me think like, how else can we speak with engineering, speak the same language as them, and also deliver things that are net new in the cleanest and simplest way possible.
That's the tricky part, is how do you set up engineers for success and give them that and nothing else, as little as possible else. Cause it can be a rat hole where you start doing the work for, and you may not even understand exactly why you're doing the work. And that's where it starts to get a little dangerous, is, you know, what purpose this is serving and how is this helping our team, our engineering partners and our company.
Yeah, it might help to possibly just paint the Disney streaming picture and then look at our organizations now at Pinterest and Meta and compare and contrast. So at Disney, in the design discovery process, there's artifacts that are generated, whether most likely screens. And a lot of the costs in this part is creating screens that have the exact artwork in there, exact copywriting, exact titles, descriptions, that sort of thing, and making sure that we could present that up to product and executive leadership. So a lot of the work, I would say a lion's share of the work is done in that capacity. Months and months go on, as I say, and then 2 weeks before engineering's ready to start working on it, they tap the design system folks on the shoulder and say, "Hey, Davey, team, can we get your help on delivering something that engineering could understand?" And in our minds, it's a little bit of the, can we make sense of what gobbledygook is in this Figma file? And what we try to do then is, hopefully, I would say in good faith, we would have gotten ahead and worked with some of these product designers beforehand. So we would have been able to feed them components and patterns to utilize. And in some cases early on, we weren't able to. So we were building components on the fly and really trying to work with designers to really pare down the feature set to make their feature more reusable and more future design system compliant. So we would then try to abstract the screens, that the dozens of screens that these designers were presenting up to leadership, to singular templates that would we would hopefully be able to annotate in either best case scenario, I would say, is in a ticket, annotate what data we're looking to be calling out, what the behavior might be. There might be some lightweight prototypes that would be going on with this, but really trying to deliver things that were more template and component based. So that's where we left off at Disney. But there was a move when I was leaving, there was a move to heavily maintain these design templates in addition to components. So we would be able to say, let's grab a product detail page and have something that is a good starting point, so we don't have to recreate these well-used templates every time.
That's the quintessential challenge, is understanding how much is enough and what's the right way to construct those things. One of the challenges we have at Pinterest is that if you asked 10 different designers how they deliver to engineering, you'd get 15 different answers. And the challenge with that is that every individual is doing their best to deliver in a way that's clear. But that's also the challenge, is every person is trying to come up with what that deliverable should look like, which means that they're not working on the feature. They're thinking about, how do I deliver this friggin' thing? And then for the poor engineer, it's like a rat maze. You know, you get one deliverable that looks this way, has a prototype. You have another deliverable, looks another way. It has a Google Doc or a paper doc. Everyone's a little different. There's no baseline expectation of what they're going to be given. And then, you know, reorg happens, person switches over. Hey, yeah, no, we don't do it that way. We've gotten this in the past. Can you do it that way? All right, now I got to relearn a completely different thing. For better or for worse, nowadays I'm less interested in the details of how you deliver. You know, there's pluses and minuses for all sorts of things like prototypes and documents, et cetera. The thing I'm more interested in is just settling on a standard that we all use. It's probably not going to be perfect, but that's cool because we can make it better. And if everyone uses it, everyone wins. So to me, that's the big win that I'm hoping that we'll see is less of like what exactly goes in there right now and more about, hey, can we just buy into all, try to do the same thing, learn from it and improve upon it, which turns out to be challenging. But I think that's one of the big things. If you'll bear with me, the metaphor of that would be like, imagine if you're driving down the street and every intersection, the stop sign looks different and you have to relearn what a stop sign looks like. It just would drive you friggin' nuts and you may drive into another vehicle. So I think a large part of it is just settling on what is good enough and what can we all agree upon and just all do that.
Yeah, all the stop signs, or let's say abstracted to street signs. So all the street signs within your city should look the same. And it's the agreed upon standard. But then once you go from your town to the next town, it may be a different color, might be a different logo on there, but it's still the same content. It's still the same shape. They look the same. They don't go from rectangles to triangles. They're all rectangles. So,
and that's the thing that boggles my mind, is that society, human society, modern civilization is built upon things like standards, where you don't have to relearn the thing and you just kind of understand how things work. And great, now I can move on. You know, we have an alphabet. We don't start adding letters every year. You know, it's the same alphabet. If you learn that, it may be tough, but at least you've learned it and you're done moving on. Modern society and civilization works based off the idea of, like, there's just these immutable rules that if you learn that, you're golden. And then we move into the world of software and we throw a lot of those tenets out and just like, great, let's just change it up. Let's do everyone do their own thing. And then we wonder why there's chaos and misalignments and just general inefficiencies. And I think it's because we've taken for granted some of the central underpinnings of how a group of people living amongst each other operate.
It was a very unique, now thinking back at the Disney streaming experience, where this was the case for Disney Plus, our sister app Star Plus, and Hulu, where design delivery had gone through the design systems team. And that was the case purely because it was a conglomerate of product designers on the team that were design system specialists. They were historically production, I'm using quotations, production designers that were very high in artifact craft, and the artifacts would come through us and we would have to green light them in order to go through engineering. And we would be able to go through artifacts with designers in office hours, in their critiques, and give them guidance on what they need to do, what best practices they need to do in setting up their file to ensure that something was going to be accepted by engineering. Now, I understand now at a different scale, we wouldn't be able to use those same mechanisms to influence the thousands of designers at Meta, but we can create, from a design ops perspective, best practices. And going back to our episode about file hygiene, this doesn't mean that we could enforce that you name every frame and every layer, as you said, simplify. Maybe we could create a plugin, or maybe we could promote usage of a plugin to automate this stuff and make it a little easier for you. So really trying to come up with solutions to read the file. So be able to look on the layers panel and read it as like you're reading code. And all of these would be similar. They may be different based on the designer, but you would see similarities between each file and understand how files are and components are constructed.
Yeah. Funny you mentioned it. I think you've probably seen that Figma plugin demo of the plugin that uses AI to rename layers. Have you seen that?
No, I haven't. I love it though.
I do think AI renaming is going to lead to some humorous situations with some funny renames, but even if it's 80% good, I don't think it's realistic to expect to have never spent the time to rename all their layers to overnight now rename all their layers. So if we can help move that along through tooling and automation, you know, that's something we're actually exploring this year, is what we can do with automation to standardize and really drive a single process for delivery. But, you know, I think a lot of it is also just helping folks understand that it's in everyone's best interest to have an effective delivery mechanism, because, you know, I've said this a million times, but designers are not getting paid to noodle around in Figma. They're getting paid to help ship features that are going to improve business priority, you know, business outcomes. So to that end, I don't think we oftentimes put enough emphasis in the hiring process of how well someone is able to work with engineers and product to get something out the door. It's a skill in and of itself, and it's probably an undervalued skill. We're busy looking at portfolios, and we're oftentimes not digging deep enough of like, yeah, but how do you get stuff shipped? Like, how do you make that happen? But I think that delivery process if you can really refine that process and optimize it, you can definitely assist folks that may not be perfect at it. So we're eager to see what we can have happen in 2023, but it's kind of uncharted territory to some extent. So it'll be interesting where we land.
Yeah, one big pet peeve of mine that, I mean, we used to do maybe 10 years ago, sketch measure style, was redlining. And I don't believe redlining is a good use of time. In fact, I think using a redlining tool and breaking components, I think, is a big no-no, especially in a file that you're going to be delivering. Like, once you break the seal, so to speak, the integrity of this thing is gone. You're not going to be able to ingest updates to the components. And redlining also just, my cheat way to do it was back in the day, if I needed something to read a certain way, I would just manipulate the redline text on there. And the tools, I think at this point, if you're building properly, whether you name layers or not, the tools are sophisticated enough that you'd be able to utilize the inspection mechanisms to be able to gather that. So it's really about trying to set stuff up in as clean as possible, make it design readable, engineering readable, so to speak, but then also make it so things inspect in the best way possible.
I also think it's important to know who your audience is. If you have a strong rapport with an engineer who understands how to read a design, and you know something is 7 pixels, they know that it really should just be 8 pixels, and they move on. I think it's important to acknowledge that. And if you can get away with a sketch, why deliver a framed painting? And it goes back to like, why are we doing all this work? So a lot of this is also training on how engineers interpret it. You know, believe it or not, this is going to sound shocking, but designers are extremely fallible. And sometimes we don't get things spaced correctly, and not taking every single decision as, you know, immutable, infallible, unfallible, whatever decisions, and using your critical thinking to say, well, they probably mean 8 pixels. I think it's pretty safe to round this up and use a token instead. This color seems out of the blue, no pun intended. I don't think this is right. And so a lot of this is also, you know, training engineers to put on their critical thinking hat and interpret what they see before they just execute on it.
Yeah. The mapping straight to tokens, color styles, I think is one of the main takeaways here. Like, as even if you're, things aren't named properly, your files may be a little bit of a mess, there's work in progress stuff in the file. As long as things are mapped to spacing that already exists, or color styles, text styles that already exist, you've done half of the work, and you can lint this stuff. You could utilize a plugin to do this. I would say one thing to me that is a little bit different and took a little bit of getting used to, and I'm sure you deal with this as well, as like we have the same issue where while designers deliver in multiple different fashions, they send their engineers and product owners into files that are work in progress per se, but they may not take the time to separate the exploration work from the deliverable. And an easy way to really just eliminate confusion is just have one file that's specifically for your final deliverable, and really try to focus the attention of this is the thing that we're delivering. This is, and you could link in Figma, you could link to an exploratory file just so you could get some more context. But you mentioned a fun thing about just simplicity and putting like the least amount of, I would say, paint and fidelity as possible. We did have some success to the chagrin of some VPs on our previous team with delivering things that were unstyled. So delivering things that did not have images in there. And we toyed around with possibly putting, instead of putting an image, put like the key to what endpoint you're going to be tapping into. I think that's a really interesting method. But really delivering components and templates that were strictly based on spacing, layout, and wait for some of like the styling to come through. And the engineers loved it because they would be able to get started and build this demo, get all of like the spacing correct. And as the visual designers were working on the visual system and the brand, we would be able to apply this layer later on.
It's we've been toying with that idea as well. If you hear squeaking in the background, it's because it's my friggin' dog losing her mind with her squeaky toy. So apologies. But I mean, it's no surprise that engineers like it. It's like handing them, you know, a Victorian literature versus Cliff Notes. Like, you don't have to parse through all the gobbledygook. Button goes here, tabs go there, image goes there. It's so much more readable. And so I've been dying for something like that, you know, wireframe equivalent components where like, don't just get rid of the gobbledygook, make it as clear as possible so that they know how to implement. I still, for myself in my head, that's still on the table for a potential deliverable of just like, don't worry what it looks like. Just use the component and you're good. It also, the other value is that if something isn't a component, it obviously needs to be rendered in full fidelity, and it makes it abundantly clear on that screen what's a component and what's not, because they look worlds apart. So there's all sorts of value to that, in my opinion. I would say I'm firmly in the minority opinion at Pinterest, but I keep bringing it up every now and then to see if the temperature has changed.
Yeah, it's so interesting. I would say, speaking on behalf of front-end engineers, it's an engineer's dream to be able to get ahead of building, like, and being ahead by maybe possibly a month or more, building off of these artifacts that are unskinned, right, unthemed, but being able to get ahead and then focusing the attention on functionality, working with the product owners to maybe possibly build in more functionality. But the critical feedback that we got that was negative was there was a bit of a lack of understanding between engineering artifacts versus executive artifacts. And there was a time where I remember I created some templates and, you know, God forbid, I made a carousel component with five images of the movie Dinosaur in there. And that was a big no-no. Like, why would you show me this carousel? Like, why didn't you put in specific artwork that was in here that would be programmed for the app today?
I'm just going to say, man, if we could all just put our imagination hats on in those circumstances, we would save a lot of time and money. I can't imagine the amount of work that's spent just adding content that's going to have no material effect on the essence of that design. And just, you know, you're spending that time that way. That means you're not spending that time elsewhere. I don't remember the last time when I've worked in this industry where I've thought to myself, boy, man, I just have too much time on my hands. So I just think just using our imagination a little bit can go a long way and save everyone a lot of time, as opposed to asking them to adding specific imagery, especially early on in the design phase.
Yeah. So yeah, that sort of goes towards the difference between executive or leadership based artifacts versus engineering artifacts. And if you know the difference between the two and you're able to generate these executive artifacts very quickly, that's fine. And hopefully the idea is that you utilize our templates and components so you could generate this stuff quickly, break them, and then hopefully if you do have any sort of changes, then we bring that and roll those changes back into the components. But yeah, it was a unique experience at Disney because we were at the end of the process. A main portion of the job was managing design delivery for these world-class video applications across multiple brands and across a kabillion different platforms. But yeah, it's been a change of pace, not being on that specific delivery side. And I would say back when we were working on the new Figma components on Disney Plus, it's a dream of any sort of maintainer to go into those files because everything was very to the T. Naming was very meticulous. Everything was in order. Things were linked to each other. Things were locked. I had the templates, components, subcomponents. It was really a pleasure to build.
I was going to say, there's been a lot of crapping on that process, but never once was there any question about what's the current design for this surface? And I'm going to say, man, in a lot of other companies, that is a very constant question. I'm just trying to keep track of what is current, who owns what, where do I get it? How do I change it? So there's something to be said there. It's just, how do you do that in a way that's efficient? And how do you keep from going down that rat hole where you're just doing an abundance of work that may not necessarily be necessary?
Yeah, this sort of goes towards the whole thing about documentation and coded components. So that wasn't something that we were able to really touch at Disney Streaming. But the idea would be, I think we both share the same idea, is that the coded components are the source components? Of truth. Whether it's the code itself. Yeah. So if you were to look at our design documentation, there's a design tab and a code tab. So the code tab will always be the source of truth because that's what is in the wild, right? And our components are either iterative of those. They could be generated from code, but they are merely references back to the coded component. So there is a big, to do about this, making sure that we track back to any sort of changes that come from code, whether intentional or unintentionally. But as long as we maintain that the artifacts that we manage here is just a representation of code, I think that's a good starting point.
Yeah, I agree. It's I think we're entirely bought in that the code-based components are, at the end of the day, the source of truth. And the Figma components should not get in the way. They should be accurate enough to where they're not getting in the way of designers understanding or engineering implementing. But beyond that, they're secondary.
This touches on the fidelity of also the design documentation during delivery. So one new thing that we've been doing is, because we've been focusing a lot on the web component libraries for us, and we did generate to get started. We generated a lot of our Figma components from React into Figma, so it has a lot of the same layer naming and structurally has a lot of the hierarchy. Has the same one-to-one hierarchy, so we maintain that the layers are the same as code. We maintain that any props that we create, any Figma properties that we create, map one-to-one to the props that are in code as well. So those are different things that we utilize here to ensure that we're speaking the same across design engineering.
Helps if I don't mute myself. We've been making strides in that space, but we still have a long way to go. And it's a lot of work. And that goes back to be careful with how many components you build, because now all of a sudden, if you do a rehaul of your Figma library. Now you got all those components that you got to rehaul. So that's what we're in the midst of doing. But it's a lot of work.
Yeah. That's, the nature of this thing, right, is to continually maintain these artifacts to ensure, like, hopefully if they're simplified abstractions of product designs, you could, with a lesser amount of effort, maintain this over time. So you could be able to utilize these libraries for 3 to 5 years. And that was something, like, at least while we were in Sketch for Disney, we were able to utilize the libraries that we built for over 2 years. So that was something that we could be really proud of. Right now, our Figma libraries for the Meta Business Design System, we've been able to utilize for over 2 years. So that's something that we could be really proud about.
Yeah, man. The dream would be if they're just wireframe, like the Figma components were just wireframes. Man, it's just, I know that will never fly, but geez, that'd just be a dream.
It's the simplest abstraction, or you'd be able to just like type out, right, or dictate Sigma style, right? Header, boom, yeah, header, oh. Boom.
Here we go, yeah. GPT-3, just design me a search interface. You know what? Nowadays, I'm not going to be surprised by anything. Who the hell knows? Could be happening next month. We'll see.
Oh, we'll see. We'll see. Well, thank you so much. We've hit our 30 minutes. Hopefully you enjoyed this deliverable.
Well done. Well done.
And thanks again, BJ.
Thank you.